This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
ESPN.com doing a great job covering all the drama with Major League Baseball, and that is Jesse Rogers. Good afternoon, Jesse. How you doing?
I'm great, guys. How are you guys doing?
We're okay. So let's start out with, I guess there's the vote at 5 o'clock to approve of this this health issue, and they'll sign off on that, the players, and then hopefully we're going to get 60 games of baseball starting in late July. Do you expect the players to vote positively and agree to this today?
I do. This is, the health protocols have never been something where, wow, you guys aren't putting things in place that are going to keep us healthy. It's actually been like, these are a lot of protocols. We need to scale back a little bit. You see what I'm saying? I think they feel like they're almost there on that end, but there's always a twist or turn around the corner with this storyline. So I'm pretty sure we'll get there. Could they need to tweak another 12, 24 hours? I guess so. But I think we're going to, the tough stuff supposedly is over, even though they didn't come to an agreement.
Jesse, was this always the intended outcome for the owners?
It does feel like that in a lot of ways. Well, I let me put a caveat. The 60 game thing, or somewhere around there, seemed like the intended thing all the time, even though they have offered more. They did offer more, but obviously at less pay. So I guess the answer is the amount they were going to offer up to the players always was about the same. Yep. It was up to players to decide how they were going to distribute it, or how it was going to get cut up, or how many games they were going to play to make that money. So the answer to the basic answer to the question is yes. I think the owners would have liked more games, even while doling out the same amount of money they're going to dole out at 60. But the union's big problem is they feel like this thing went from an 80 or 90 game debate down to much less because the league didn't negotiate really in good faith and subsequently dragged their feet using various means like their first offer of a sliding pay scale and things like that. So the calendar would be reduced, and now the debate was only going to be 60, 65, 70 at most. Turns out it's going to be about 60.
And, Jesse, to that end, we talked to Buster Olney last week, and he said he didn't envision a baseball season taking place unless the MLPA waived their right to file a grievance for the owners not having the longest possible season going into this summer. So I guess my question to you would be, what is the confidence level from people in and around baseball of the union's ability to be able to successfully have a grievance and to win that case?
Well, the league thinks they have built up some insulation here. One, by negotiating all the way up until the end. Manfred at the last minute on Sunday gave Tony Clark some negotiating things back for 2021. And they were small movements, but they might look good in front of an arbitrator. And now here today, if he actually implements 60, well, that's the amount they turned down the player. So how much less is he paying them? Well, he's not. He's paying them 60, which is what they offered. So he's creating this atmosphere that we negotiate in good faith. Look at what we've done all the way up until the end here. The league is worried about a grievance. They are worried about it, but they feel like months and months of talks on that they've done enough to be able to say, like, in front of an arbitrator, look at this evidence of negotiating all the way up until the end, will be okay. So they don't want to see grievance, but they're confident they'd win one.
And Jesse Rogers with us here, covers baseball really well for ESPN.com. Do the players have leverage now moving into the next CBA? Because I guess that's probably why they didn't give in on the expanded postseason and the universal DH and the players being mic'd. They held those things out to have some kind of leverage moving forward, right?
I think the leverage they've created is just more in terms of the environment in this sense. They really held their ground. They held their ground on the 100% prorated pay, which was the big sticking point here. I think the whole process showed something to the owners that the union's not going to break. I mean, the owners threw that sliding pay scale in and the players didn't even blink and even discuss it among themselves. They rejected it outright, you know, trying to divide the union that way. So that should create some leverage. I don't know where it manifests itself in the next deal, but if the owners think, these guys are pushovers, I think the players proved that they can stick together through tough times.
Yeah, but Jesse, I mean, this is only going to get worse. This relationship is only going to get worse. I mean, especially when, you know, the owners make the decision that they're not going to spend money in free agency. I guess my question would be this. if Tony Clark doesn't win this grievance, I mean, where does he stand as far as the players are concerned? I get the feeling like he's been overmatched this entire time going up against Rob Manfred.
Yeah, you may not be wrong. I mean, there's some union leadership dysfunction that needs to be addressed before the next CBA, and I don't know if that means a new face, you know, to lead the negotiations or all the way at the top. Remember, Tony Clark was reelected after the 2016 CBA, which has been a complete win for ownership. So they have, you know, attached themselves to Tony Clark come hell or high water. Now another labor disagreement here, and then we've got the CBA coming up. So you're not wrong. There's dysfunction there. Might need a new face, but at least he kept them together, right? You didn't see a lot of breaks within the union publicly. Behind the scenes, there are some agents that aren't happy, and I'm sure some players as well. But the prominent players were able to keep the group together. There's been some agents unhappy with Tony Clark for years now, basically going back to 16.
Jesse, no doubt the financial impact of this summer is going to be felt for seasons to come. But in looking at the free agent class this coming offseason, I mean, outside of Mookie Betts because he's going to get his money, what happens to guys like JT Realmuto and George Springer and Marcus Semien? What happens to their free agent market? Are they going to get the money that they're looking for?
No, they're not. I had an agent text me this morning when I asked him what his take was, and he said, this offseason will be a massacre. That's his exact words. I'm looking at the text right now. And an avalanche of bad bleepity blank that will take us to the 2022 CBA negotiations. So, yeah, other than watching baseball, there are no winners out of it. You know, like, we're all going to get to watch some baseball, but there are no winners in this thing. And especially so for those free agents, including Mookie Betts. They're not going to get what they were going to get. I mean, I cover the Cubs, and Javi Baez was in negotiations with the Cubs for an extension before the pandemic hit. I mean, he may have been days away, let's be dramatic, hours away from signing, and things got shut down. How do those negotiations look when they pick them up again here on the other side of the crisis? I can't imagine what they look like, and I can't imagine what it's going to look like for free agents. And that would have been without the labor problems. With the labor problems, owners are ticked off, players are ticked off. Now the owners hold the ball, right, when they get to free agency. They're the ones that have to say yes to signing these players. So it's not going to look pretty for the players, for sure.
All right. Assuming the players agree tonight at 5 o'clock, what's the time frame now for spring training to start, the season to start, the season to end? Kind of walk us through what it's going to look like.
Yeah, I mean, spring training will start a week from, I think, tomorrow. And if some players, you know, are late because they're, you know, making living arrangements or traveling from out of the country, that's fine. You know, you just start. They got to get into shape, and whoever's there is there. Hopefully most people can get where they need to be within a week. So think about a week from tomorrow in terms of spring training. I could be off by a day. That puts opening day, if you think about 3 weeks or so from there, July 24th, 26th, somewhere like that. And then it's 60 games or so in about 66, 67 days. So they still want to end basically by October 1st. Again, I could be off by a day or two. But everything you've been reading is pretty much right on the money. A week to get everybody in place, 3 weeks to get ready. And spring training will be inter-squad only. I mean, maybe here in Chicago the Cubs play the Sox, the Yankees play the Mets. But that'll be a couple games only. They do not want to intermingle teams for meaningless games. They don't want to take the chance with the coronavirus. So maybe a couple games at the end against a team in your city, and then they'll start the regular season. It'll end by the end of September.
Jesse Rogers joins us here on the show. Jesse, you mentioned free agency, and it's going to be a bloodbath and everything else. Do you think this is an opportunity for some of the big boys, the Yankees, the Dodgers, teams like that, to take advantage of the situation and start looking to kind of poach the bigger contracts from the less fortunate financial teams?
No, I don't think that's going to happen, because I don't think the bigger teams are going to take on those contracts. I just don't. Now, obviously, there's always exceptions to the rule, but everyone – you know, I talked to the owner of the Cubs. He called it biblical losses. That was a phrase that went viral. You know, every team is suffering big time. So I don't see teams like trying to win this season is secondary to trying not to lose that much more money. So there may be trades. There may be a trade deadline. And, of course, there's going to be an exception to the rule. But I don't see a lot of teams taking on salary even from the big markets. That's my opinion. This is uncharted territory. I could be wrong, but I just don't see it. I think mitigating the losses is more important than winning, at least in the short term. And the short term could include next season as well.
Jesse, when we talk about the baseball regular season, we usually refer to it as being a marathon and not a sprint. But this is actually going to be a sprint. Do you think that this regular season format of 60 games, this truncated schedule, does it favor a particular team more so than any other teams?
I think the cliche thinking is it favors a veteran team, especially one that's been there before. They know how to get ready. They know how to win in pressure. That's my thinking. I could be wrong, though. I mean, if some young team gets off to a hot start, a lot of times those teams would fade in June or July. But in this case, by the time 2 months rolls around, we're in the playoffs. So it could work both ways. I will say this. A veteran pitcher that used to have, you know, great 25 starts in him that just doesn't have it anymore like that, you know, he might have the advantage because John Lester used to, you know, have 30 starts in him, good ones. But now he's down to 15, right? And, well, the season's 15 or 12 starts. So I do think the veterans who don't have as much in the tank should be able to bring more to the table. Then again, a lot of those guys need April and May to get their bodies rolling. They don't have that luxury. So we could go back and forth on who has the advantages. I do think veteran teams in general do. They can sort of get themselves ready for a pennant race right away, I think, better than young teams.
Jesse, last one for me. It doesn't have to be a long answer. I know one of the proposals said that in order to get the playoffs in the World Series, the players would be willing to play a neutral site World Series. Will that possibility still exist, or because there's no agreement, that won't be a possibility?
No, they won't do neutral unless they're forced to because of the coronavirus. Neutral was mostly if they were going to play into November or December, and obviously some of the cities, just weather-wise, you couldn't handle. But mm-hmm. with them trying to stick with the regular format, they're going to play in those home cities. And I know they want to anyway. I know this was in the back of their minds. In case fans are allowed in, I mean, the last thing you want is a Yankee-Met World Series in Florida, and you could have had fans in New York, right?
Yeah.
So I think they want to play them in their home cities as long as the coronavirus allows it.
All right, Jesse, we appreciate it, man. Thanks for checking in for a couple minutes, and hopefully next time we talk to you, it'll be about things actually happening on the diamond. Good stuff as always.
Should be interesting. Anytime, guys. Take care.
All right, good stuff. That is Jesse Rogers. He's very good between
him. He's great.
I mean, all, Kirkjian and Buster.
We got it covered. Excellent. Baseball, we got yeah. covered.
Passan, very, very good. Very, very good. What? There could be a trade deadline, by the way?
Well, no, I didn't even mean like that. I meant like a Nolan Arenado contract, something like that. Like the teams that have, that are, you know, the big market teams.
No, I know what you're saying, but can, like, is there, when would the trade deadline be? After game 27?
Right.
Maybe.
Exactly.
Halfway through the season?
It's so weird. This is going to be a really weird season.
It's going to be a weird season, but I mean, the one way to make it more exciting would have been to come to the agreement so we could have seen 16 teams.
It would have made it amazing. Because this season is messed up anyway, right? It's not the normal
yes.
season. So this would be the season you'd want to see extra teams in the postseason, players mic'd up, universal DH. All these things would have made sense this year.
Well, you're going to see the universal DH this year
right.
anyway. That was part of the health and safety. But, I mean, it's baseball already had a problem before we hit the pandemic with interest. And they've done nothing to refresh it or change it. There's nothing extra exciting about it. Like, there were other reasons that you turned on NASCAR yesterday besides the race.
Yes.
So
in
why
fact,
you took
the reasons were pretty much solely aside from the race.
Okay, so one of the things baseball could have offered was we're gonna have players mic'd up. You know how much everyone loves that. Well, mm-hmm. I want to tune in to see what that looks like. How that sounds.
Would have been great.
They don't have that.
No. Would have been great.
It's ridiculous. No, because then the players they solidarity. Okay, we'll see how together you are during free agency. When the owners aren't spending any money.
Nope, they're not going to get paid. He just said it's going to be unbelievable.
They're going to have to do something with the collective bargaining agreement, though. Like, they got to address teams tanking and owners not spending money in free agency. That has to change.
But this is exactly why they should have used this time. Sit down. First of all, I hate to take a side, but I got to blame the Players Association for allowing it to be, you know, the March 26th agreement to be this ambiguous. Because even when I read it, it's like, who's to sit here and tell me that, you know, why do I get to decide what's feasible for the owners? the feasibility of playing no game. Well, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. There's no definitive amount of games. It's what the owners decide is feasible for them.
You would tell your lawyer, we need to cross that out right now. That needs,
yeah, I would have fired him immediately. But that's what, but we said this the entire time, is that use these months. If we realized this was going to be a fugazi negotiation going back and forth for no reason because we wanted to get to a certain amount of games that you wanted to play, use the 2 months to be productive. Start chipping away at issues that are going to come up in the next CBA so you're not going to have to deal with those issues. I'll give you expanded playoffs. Well, what are you going to give us? Go back and forth like that. Don't just keep sending emails back and forth.
They didn't sit down at a table until last week.
And what did that accomplish? You looked him in the face and said, hey, by the way, Tony, we're not doing 70 games. We can't do it. And the proposal he sent you back is for 70 games?
That was just ridiculous. Rob Manfred went out to Arizona to check a box. That's all that was about. That was about recognizing that we're probably going to have to deal with the grievance. But it looks better if our commissioner goes to meet the executive director of the MLBPA in his own backyard. That looks better.
Now, Rick, part of the beauty of Jesse Rogers ending early is we now have time for an early observation.
Yeah, we're going to knob it up.
You want to knob it up now?
Oh, let's knob it up.
All right, Santy, let's knob it up.
You need to feel better about your life.
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
And totally redeem yourself!
Let's take a look at Rick's knobservation.
Welcome back, dum-dum.
All right, here we go, fellas. Tuesday edition of Knobservations. And as we like to start off every Knobservations, we're going to get a live look at the weather with Dave Rothenberg.
Sunny and warm right now, sitting at 85. A little warmer later on today, moving up just 1 degree, really, 86 degrees, but it's a nice one. Sun rose at 5:22 in the morning, 8:30 sunset tonight. Chance of rain, there is a chance, 30%, but it probably won't be till later in the day, maybe 10, 11 o'clock tonight. Humidity sitting at 54%. A little bit of wind south out of the south at 10 miles an hour. Feels even hotter than the 86, 89 degrees. Precipitation to this point is at zero. The pressure is at 29.8. Visibility good at 10 miles. UV index, wear your sunblock is all I can say. That's 8. Air quality index is 38, and the air quality is considered good.
The weather outside is
well
weather.
Done, David.
Thank you.
I wish you would have given me that sunblock advice a little bit sooner.
I say it every day. Every day, yeah, that the UV index is 7 or higher, I always say wear your sunblock.
And for some reason, I choose to ignore it. I feel like I own the sun. Vitamin D is good for coronavirus, isn't it?
Up to a certain amount. Not to the point that you're burning yourself, though.
Yeah, I may have gone a little bit overboard. All right, here we go. Game show that is sweeping the nation. Dave Rothenberg with a big win yesterday.
Yep.
What time did Rick DiPietro go to bed? Dave, it's on you. You control the board.
All right, so I'm up 1-0 in the week. I could take a stranglehold on the week with another victory today. Went to bed late on Sunday night, which leads me to believe maybe you went to bed a little earlier last night. I'm going to go right in that 741 wheelhouse. 741.
741, Dave Rothenberg. And he goes first to put the pressure on. This was almost, remind me of what Daniel Berger did a couple weeks ago to find it. Finish out. I'm going to finish out, put the pressure back on his opponent.
Yeah, I feel good, 741.
Christopher Canty, it is on you.
Am I going with 740 or 742?
Mm-hmm.
That is the question. And you know, for some strange reason, I think this was a later bedtime for you, so I'm going to go with 742.
All right. I mean, give me the breaking news sounder, please, Santiago. I need to
hit it on the head, didn't he?
For the first time in the history of this wonderful game show. Chris Canty actually hit it on the nose, on the button. 742.
Well, two things. Firstly, congratulations, Chris, for playing it beautifully. But, you know, there occasionally is that time after a game where you just don't feel badly about your performance, even in a loss.
No, you can't.
I guess a minute off. I can't feel badly about that.
No, but see, here's the problem, though. You've set the tone. So rather than this play game, like,
you gifted it to me. He gifted it to me.
Yeah, but you want to play. I mean, the intention of this game initially was to be played straight up. Like, just make a guess. Don't be like, okay, because he went 741, I can win going 740 or 742. It's like, make a legitimate guess. So you've set these rules, and he just took advantage of them.
Yeah, but I can't have done better than that. I mean, the only way I could have done better was going 742. I went 741. I missed by 1 minute. I mean, who knows if your clock was actually set appropriately. I could have been right.
this was iPhone. You can have done better. You, which probably wouldn't have said you couldn't have done better, but you can have done better.
Right.
However you want to frame it.
Yeah.
But
well,
that
listen,
was well.
Here,
I mean, that was the best one ever.
I'm going to graciously turn to you, Chris. Congratulations. You did well. You earned control of the board. You win the day. But I don't feel badly about my performance.
Well, Dave, you play to win the game. Isn't that what Herm Edwards said? You don't feel bad about losing?
I don't feel, not, no. I don't feel awful about it.
Okay.
I mean, you
I would have preferred to win.
That's a loser's mentality.
Being a minute off, that's fine. I don't feel bad about it.
That's a loser's mentality.
I mean, well, maybe I shouldn't be as gracious.
You almost pitched a perfect game. 7:41, you were 1 minute off.
I mean, I had a no-no into the ninth.
It's impressive.
And then I'm up 8-0, and they bunted.
Remember when Scherzer for the perfect game against Pittsburgh, and the guy leaned his elbow into it?
Yep.
Brutal. Bunt bad, purposely leaning your elbow in so you get hit by a pitch to break up the perfect game.
Yeah, weak.
Especially if you have an elbow pad on. That guy would have been on my list.
I would hit that guy every single time.
Every single time. I didn't even care if the bases were loaded and he was up. I would hit him.
All right, let's go. Stories. We need stories.
All right, stories. Here's some good news. Which, again, I mean, this is why I need to go to bed at 7:42, because the more you read about Corona and everything else, the more your head just wants to explode. So this is a story today. The strong summer sun is capable of wiping out 90% or more of coronavirus living on surfaces in just 34 minutes, a new study has found.
Nice.
Yeah, which makes no sense. So would strictly point to what's going on in Florida as just a lack of social distancing.
Have you seen it?
Well, yeah, but yes, I have seen it. It's avoidable. What this is telling you, because it's scalding hot and the sun can kill COVID on the surface in 34 minutes, it's because you're not taking the proper precautions with masks,
right,
and not
social
distancing.
You're not wearing a mask and you're not social distancing.
Did you realize that from the months of December until March, it can live on surfaces for up to a day or more?
I wish you hadn't told me that.
Yeah, a day or more. That's what makes the fall scary. Because you can get it from just touching things.
Mm-hmm.
With the risk of I should have brought that up because I can't pronounce it. All right, here we go, boys. Did this happen in Florida? A defiant shopper fought his way into a Walmart after he was denied entry for refusing to wear a face mask. This video has gone viral. It's been viewed over 4 million times. Shows an older man, gray-haired man, scuffling with an employee at the Walmart. This was actually the same day that face masks were made mandatory. Guy says, you got to wear a mask. Doesn't want to hear it. Shoves his way into the Walmart, even falling on the floor at one point.
Ugh.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
Clearly determined to get in, the man gets up, scrambles his way inside as the worker continues to try to block
him. Scrambles his way inside.
Yeah.
Great.
Actually, what's crazy about the story is in the video, the man who's trying to get in is actually offered a mask from a patron who says, I have extra ones, and he still does not want
the mask.
And he
just refuses. Yes. Just
refuses. Yeah. What an evil guy.
Yeah. Did that happen in Florida?
Chris, you have a feel?
Now, what's really sad is that I actually sent the video to Santiago before the show even started, and I can't remember whether or not it happened in Florida.
Yes.
See, so at one point in time, you knew where this took place, and now you don't.
Yes, but I'm going to lean toward Florida because I just feel like that is the attitude that people in Florida have about the coronavirus. So I'm going to say yes, Florida.
I'm going to agree. I mean, obviously, this is not international. So we got Walmart, tons of Walmarts in Florida. I will say this was, yes, in fact, a Floridian story.
Yes, a Floridian story, he says. Ray Santiago, what do you believe?
Well, as CeCe said, he sent it to me this morning, and I do remember where it was. It was actually a Florida story, so I will vouch for CeCe on that one. It's Florida.
I blame you. Time out for a quick second. I want to call a quick 20. I blame Dave Rothenberg for this.
Hang on a second. How is this me?
Because Santiago,
when you said I'd like to blame, you know what I honestly thought? I thought, well, at least this is going to be the one time it's not me being blamed, because I knew nothing about this story.
No, but this is what you do, because Santiago sent me a story. You didn't know. No one knew. He actually guesses right, then tells you that he got the story, and you verbally berated him. So now he's so nervous that you're going to come after him that he just can't even just pretend and play along. He needs to just out himself. You've emotionally broken him down.
I think I already outed him, though. Didn't I?
Yeah, he already mentioned that he sent it to me.
Yeah, but you said you saw the story, but you didn't remember. Even if you did remember, you want to play the game, so we'll just pretend like you don't remember. Santa could have done the same thing, but he's so afraid that Dave's going to lash out at him that he's emotionally broken down.
I've done nothing wrong. I've done nothing wrong.
Yeah, you are kind of abusive.
Oh, very abusive.
Stop it, please.
This is not a healthy relationship.
Baby.
See, that's what I'm talking about.
Dave.
That's right. Just well, I'm not just going to stand back and let this happen.
Mental health is a real thing, Dave. I'm calling Kevin Love on you. Here we go. Last one for today's observations. I should have probably titled today's observations the Novak Djokovic edition of Nobservations. Novak Djokovic, who's been pretty outspoken. I did a story last week. Sounded like he was potentially going to come participate in the U.S. Open. You've also heard him talking about, you know, he didn't want to be, once they did come up with the vaccine, didn't want to be vaccinated and everything else. So turns out, and I think we've all, if you haven't seen the video posted on Twitter, you should check it out. Not only did he have
dancing away in a club with hundreds of others.
Yeah. And now he has it. Started off with Grigor Dimitrov, who tested positive. Now Djokovic has it. And then the voice of reason, Nick Kyrgios, boneheaded decision to go ahead with the exhibition. Speedy recovery, fellas, but that's what happens when you disregard all protocols.
Yep. The fact that Nick Kyrgios is the voice of reason in tennis is terrifying for everyone.
Yeah, that's sad. That's sad when you get to that state. But the one thing I'll say about this, guys, I want Djokovic to be okay, but I want him to feel miserable as he's going through this because it's absolutely ridiculous to ignore all the advice that we're getting from the medical experts. I think people that don't want to listen to what they're saying we should do to prevent the spread of the virus, I think they're idiots.
I could not agree with you more.
Why would you not listen to the science?
Because they don't care.
You big dummy.
You deserve everything.
He's indestructible, Chris. He's indestructible.
You deserve everything you get.
Now he's got COVID-19.
Yeah.
Yes, he does.
All right, Rick.
But now maybe he doesn't need. Maybe he got his wish. Maybe he doesn't need to get vaccinated. Now he has the antibodies. Maybe.
Yeah. Maybe. All right. You hear health. You hear hydration. You think of Mike Tenenbaum. Good afternoon, Mike Tenenbaum. How are you?
Good afternoon, fellas. How you doing?
We're okay. I mean, there's a lot going on in the world of football, and nothing bigger right now than what's going on with Jamal Adams. So, I mean, there's a lot of avenues to go here. My first thought is, why did we get here? They couldn't have sat down prior to the draft and tried to have a meeting of the minds and figure out what direction was the appropriate way to go?
Yeah, sometimes, you know, some problems are easier solved than others, fellas, and I'm sure it's not for a lack of effort on the Jets' part. You know, sometimes players just don't like what they hear, and you want to, you know, get to them as quickly as possible and tell them, hey, here's what we can do, and here's what we can't do, and here's why, and I can't imagine that, you know, the Jets haven't communicated that. So maybe they, and I don't know this, but I assume they did everything within reason to tell them the news. And maybe Jamal Adams is just acting out on what he didn't want to hear.
So, Mike, is this fixable? I mean, how do you think this ends?
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you this, you know, Rick, I lived it with Darrell Revis where, you know, I just spent months working on a problem that I knew there was a solution. And we just had to keep working hard and be great listeners and, you know, find a spot that we could live with. And, you know, Revis was a great player who had outplayed his contract. So I'm always one who's an optimist by nature that if you get in a room, you know, reasonable people can find a landing spot. And both sides are probably going to have to give in a little bit more than ideally they'd want to. And I think, again, we can't underestimate the Jerry Jones factor here, which is, you know, Zeke Elliott was richly, richly rewarded. And a lot of people would say unnecessarily, myself included, because he had multiple years to go and players talk and players see things. And I'm sure Jamal Adams is sitting there saying that I've outproduced my contract much the way Zeke Elliott did. And I should be rewarded just the same way.
Well, and here's the thing, Mike. I mean, we saw the Chicago Bears reward Eddie Jackson, their Pro Bowl safety, with a 4-year, $58.4 million contract extension. Now, Jamal Adams is a better player than that. But I mean, Eddie Jackson is the highest paid safety right now in the NFL at 14.6 on average annual value. So what would a market value contract look like for Jamal Adams?
Chris, I think it's right there. I think it's a shade over that. And I would put a limit on it. You know, Jamal Adams is a great player, obviously, but I think there is a limit because it's the safety position. And I'm sure that's one of the many areas they're probably having a disagreement right now.
Mike Tenenbaum with us here, 98.7 ESPN. So let's pretend you're the Jets GM again. You're wearing that hat. Are you just saying to him right now, I'm sorry, we are not giving you a deal before the season? Would you entertain it? Would you look to trade him? Like right now, what do you think Joe Douglas is thinking about? What would you do here?
Yeah, that's the old Coach Parcells, right? We're in the business of collecting good football players, not trading them or releasing them. So that's a tough message, you know, for a player to hear that, hey, not only are you not getting paid, but you're not being traded, and we expect you to have a great year. And I would work really, really hard to keep reiterating how important he is and how much he means to the franchise. But, you know, we're not trading you. And, you know, you're a foundational player. And at the appropriate time, we're going to want to reward you. And that time isn't now. But the task at hand is to win as many games as a franchise this year as possible.
Mike Tannenbaum joins us through the show. Mike, at what point, though, do you just come to the conclusion, if you're Joe Douglas, that Jamal Adams doesn't want to be a Jet anymore?
Yeah, I think we're a ways away from that, Rick. I just, you know, when you have the pros in one of these jobs, like, you get there because you're smart, you're patient, you have to be strategic. And, again, just think about this. Like, you just can't give away players every time they don't like what they hear. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, you'll be an expansion team pretty quick. So, I think, you got to work hard at it. And, you know, there's going to be bumps in the road. And as we know, like, you guys do a great job of covering it, but everything in New York is times 10, right? So when things are going great, it's times 10. And when you're having bumps in the road like they are right now, it's times 10. But, you know, the longer-term picture is this guy is a great young player that shouldn't go anywhere.
Mike, do you at all worry about Jamal Adams being forced to come back to the Jets and play this season? Do you worry about him being disruptive in your locker room or being disruptive to the program building for Adam Gase and Joe Douglas?
Yeah, I think and Chris, you know this as a former player. You know, I think there's a time and a place. And when it's time to go play football, we're playing football, and we all have the same decal on the side of our helmet, and we got to go win games. And, you know, there's a business side to, you know, the sport, and that's now. But when it's time to go, we're going. And we expect you tomorrow to be a great player and a great teammate. And, again, we'll deal with this at the appropriate time.
Mike Tannenbaum with us here, 98.7 ESPN. It feels like you're kind of saying under no circumstance would you trade him right now. Is that fair to say?
I would never say never, Dave. But, I mean, it would have to be something so, like, multiple first-round picks. Because, again, you're trying to draft players like Jamal Adams. You're trying to get players that are game-changing, explosive, difference-making players. I mean, that's what you're looking for at the end of the day. So, that's who I want on my team. Now, look, they could use a ton of corners, pass rushers. You know, we've talked about that quite a bit. Obviously, they've done a nice job on the offensive line, and you probably could, you know, pick up a couple of those pieces with picks. But at the end of the day, like, I always believed in this guy is a playmaker. He's disruptive. He sets the tempo. I'm not in a rush to get rid of him.
Yeah, I know that they're probably not in a rush to get rid of him, and it would have made more sense to trade him before the draft. I just think if you're Jamal Adams, and I understand both sides, he's probably having a hard time wrapping his mind around the Jets haven't done much winning. I mean, they're 16-32 in the 3 years he's been here, and if all of a sudden I got teams like the Baltimore Ravens sniffing around and the Cowboys sniffing around, why wouldn't you try to force your way out of New York when you could end up on a team that's, you know, potentially competing for a championship and that's going to pay you because they just traded first-round draft picks for you?
Yeah, I would say you're part of the reason we are going to turn around. It's a great opportunity, and when we make the playoffs here, there's nothing like it, and I know that from firsthand, and it's there's nothing like winning in New York, and we haven't put enough good pieces around you, and that's going to change, and our future is bright, and hopefully we got the right quarterback, we got the right guy coaching them, and you're not going anywhere, and, you know, we'll deal with your contract when we think it's right. We're not going to be beholden to the Dallas Cowboys making a mistake.
Mike T, yesterday Dak Prescott signed his $31.4 million franchise tag. Can you walk me through the logic behind Dak making the decision to sign it now as opposed to waiting up until the July 15th deadline to work out a long-term deal?
Yeah, I guess I've been thinking about that, Chris. I don't think there's a lot there except to say if there was whatever that tender was going to be, you know, pulled for whatever reason. He has all the leverage in the world. He's 16 games away from making either $38 million or being an unrestricted free agent. So I'm not quite sure why it was today, but he has, like, to me, like, he has the money guaranteed. He's going to go to training camp now. I'm sure as a quarterback, he's saying, I want to be there anyway. We got a new head coach, even though it's still the new offensive team, offensive coordinator. I want to be there with my teammates. I think he took a much bigger risk last year playing for basically the minimum than he is this year playing for $31 million. I think people forget that. Like, the other side of this by miles. So, you know, he basically has, unless something changes, 31 this year, 38 next year. That's $69 million fully guaranteed. So if I'm Dak Prescott, you know, I'm really in a great situation.
Mike Tannenbaum with us here, 98.7 ESPN. So, I mean, July 15th is the day a long-term deal's got to be done or the franchise tag is played out for the season. Do you think they get it done? I mean, it sounds like Cowboys want five, he wants four. Do you think they find a way to get this thing done?
They should. I mean, he's a winner. That's what matters at the end of the day. So, I would think that they'll figure that out. And ultimately, Jerry Jones is a deal maker, albeit one that's somewhat unconventional, but I do think there has to be a landing spot. And again, I've been very critical of them because I think they put themselves in this position because they signed players that were good players. But to me, it starts with the quarterback. And when you hit on him, you know, get his deal done and then figure out everybody else.
Mike Tannenbaum joins us here in the show. Mike, potentially my last question, probably not though. If there was going to be hesitancy, like if you're Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones and there's going to be hesitancy to sign him to, you know, this long-term deal, why use the exclusive franchise tag on him as opposed to the non-exclusive and cost yourself an extra $6 or $7 million?
Yeah, because you don't want to, it's your quarterback, right? And you don't want to, you know, be out on that expensive yacht that Jerry owns. And hear that, you know, Shad Khan is entertaining Dak Prescott in Jacksonville, right? And then all of a sudden, it's some front-loaded deal that pays Dak Prescott some unbelievable amount of money, $60 million in cash in year one, or you know, whatever it may be. It's the quarterback. So I think you're paying a little bit of a premium to know, hey, we got this guy here. He's here this year. And then, you know, we'll figure it out from there.
Mike T, one of the things that we've been talking about is the impact on the financials with the pandemic going on. And I guess when we're looking at football, how will what we're dealing with now and potentially not having fans in stadiums this fall, how will that affect football in terms of how these teams operate moving forward?
Yeah, I think, well, one, financially, I think the league is incredibly lucky. You know, it's amazing, like that collective bargaining agreement was a 10-year extension back in February, and it seems like that was like 100 years ago, right? But because of that, they could probably smooth out the salary cap in future years. So maybe we won't see the growth that we all thought we would have, but we don't think that the cap will go down. And I think we'll see crowd noise piped in and, you know, being on GetUp, it's interesting, guys, because right now we're following Korean baseball and they've been very creative in terms of what people see on TV. So I think from a TV standpoint, I think there'll be, you know, noise and crowd noise. And I think it'll still be, you know, a very entertaining event. I think in person, it's just going to feel different. That's just going to be the new normal for a while. And that's just the reality of it.
But Mike, so I guess I was really referring to like, what will teams do in terms of contract extensions with players this coming year? Will there be more or less activity at the trade deadline? Like, what will we see if we do have a flat cap over the next couple of years?
Yeah, I think it's going to come from the middle class. I don't think Dak Prescott's going to take less. I think Jamal Adams will certainly get paid. I don't think there's any issue about him getting paid. I think it's more of when will he get paid, not if he'll get paid. But I think the middle class will be hurt tremendously, and teams will identify the players they have to have, and everybody else will become a luxury. So, and I think the other thing, Chris, from what I'm hearing, like, I think we'll see something with the quarterback position. And, you know, this year it could be maybe a practice squad with unlimited eligibility. Maybe they go into quarantine, as Bruce Arians had suggested. So I think a lot will happen between now and, you know, September 1, just in terms of, hey, how did the NBA handle it? How did baseball handle it if they play, obviously, the NHL, college football? So I think the NFL really has the luxury of, you know, sitting back from a chronological standpoint and see how these other leagues handle things.
Mike Tannenbaum with us here, 98.7 ESPN. You think this is, because you've heard some coaches, Mike, come out and say that they just don't know how you socially distance in football, right? I mean, John Harbaugh said it and Sean McVay said it. Is this just going to be, we're going to go full steam ahead and we're playing football here?
Yeah, and again, like, I'm just going by, you know, watching the news like everybody else, but I do feel like in some regards, like, the narrative has gone from, hey, we got to flatten the curve to finding a cure. So I think people are going to get it. You know, that's just the reality of it. I think we all have to understand and embrace that. Like, people will test positive, coaches will. And I think we're just going to have a system where, you know, if player X is out for two games, like, you know, life's going to have to move on. And you really can't social distance. Like, the very nature of football is it's a contact sport. And the facilities, while I have not been in every one of them, I have probably seen the vast majority. And I will tell you that, especially when you get to training camp, 80, 90 man rosters, like, oftentimes a lot of teams are doubling up lockers. It's just, it's hard to get everybody in one sort of facility. And I heard, like, some teams may rotate, bring offense in the morning, defense in the afternoon. I think we may still have some virtual meetings. So I think there's still a lot in the air that has to be worked out.
So, Mike, in saying all that and all the obstacles and everything else, you as a GM, wouldn't you want to get guys back as soon as possible to kind of run through the protocols and see what happens as opposed to,
yeah,
you know, doing it when it's going to cost you meaningful days?
Absolutely. And the other thing, just to take that step further, is conditioning. You know, everyone can work out on their own, and I'm sure a lot of them players are trying to do that to the best of their ability within reason, but there's nothing like supervision. So that would be something else I'd be very, very concerned about, just in terms of guys coming back in late July, and then you have soft tissue injuries. So with everything else you have, from testing to quarantine to social distancing, you know, you're going to have half your team dealing with, you know, soft tissue injuries, and that's another concern that would really keep me up at night.
All right, Mike, we appreciate a couple minutes here. As we always say to you, stay safe, stay healthy, and, of course, stay hydrated. We will talk to you next week.
Yeah, and I can't wait to, you know, at this rate, you know, compounding interest, you know, Rick's going to owe me Starbucks until, like, you know, my kids graduate college here. So, you know, the tab is open and the meter is running.
Mike, just so you know, in my current state mentally, I would give me two more weeks. I may drive to Florida to hand deliver you a Starbucks.
Do you want to meet like in Virginia halfway or something like that? You know, like,
yeah. I mean, this we'll social distance. We'll have a latte. I'll bring a heater. We'll heat it up. Be perfect.
All right. Well, that sounds great. We can take this on the road, right?
Mike, we'll talk to you next week. We appreciate it as always.
All right, thanks, guys.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg, weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your teenager to help around the house?
Okay, Mom, I emptied the dishwasher, vacuumed the basement, and folded the sheets out of the dryer.
Wait, what?
Oh, and next, I'm going to clean Mitten's litter box.
Are we in some kind of prank show or something? That's a camera, isn't it?
There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.